Jim Bell sends new eyes to Mars this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. The principal investigator for MastCam Z, the twin zoom cameras that will reveal the red planet as never before, joins us as the launch of the Perseverance Mars rover approaches. Jim will also tell us about his latest books. Emily Lakdawalla returns with a review of the four Brave sample return missions underway or launching this year. It's ancient Greek computers and a new look at the night sky for Bruce Betts and What's Up, and someone will win one of Jim Bell's great books. Here's a sampling of headlines from this week's edition of The Downlink, the Planetary Society's newsletter. NASA's Perseverance rover is all buttoned up inside the nose cone of the Atlas V rocket that will blast it toward Mars in a few weeks. Launch is scheduled for no sooner than July 22nd. We have a comprehensive, continually updated guide to all three Mars missions that are about to begin. You'll find it at planetary.org/Mars2020. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine announced last Wednesday that the agency's headquarters building in Washington, D.C. will be named after Mary W. Jackson, the first African-American female engineer at NASA. The building sits on Hidden Figures Way. Bob and Doug's excellent adventure on the International Space Station continues. Yeah, I know, I'm mixing entertainment metaphors. Bob Behnken and Expedition 63 Commander Chris Cassidy have completed a spacewalk that had them replacing aging batteries. And here's a story we'll have to follow. A group of scientists at Harvard and other universities has received NASA's first ever funding to search for signs of intelligent life on exoplanets. These so-called technosignatures might include evidence of industrial pollutants in a distant world's atmosphere, which would seem to put a limit on how much smarter than us they may be. You'll find more at planetary.org/downlink, and you can find my own monthly newsletter at planetary.org/radionews. They're both free. Here is the Planetary Society's solar system specialist, Emily Lakdawalla. Emily, welcome back. Let's talk about this brand new piece about sample return. You called it Sample Return Roundup. It's in the new June solstice issue of the Planetary Report, the free magazine from the Planetary Society, which is available right now at planetary.org. You know, Jim Bell will shortly mention the sample return goals of Perseverance on our show. We'll talk a little bit about those, but you mentioned that it's been a banner year for it is a banner year for other sample return missions as well. What are we looking forward to?
Well, it's kind of an interesting year. There are actually four missions that are going to be active this year that are in some way involved in sample return. Perseverance is actually the one that's going to take the longest for samples to get back. There's two missions active right now, gathering samples or having already gathered samples, and one that's going to be launching later this year. So the two active ones are both at near-Earth asteroids. They are Japan's Hayabusa 2 and United States' OSIRIS-REx mission, which will both bring back samples of near-Earth asteroids. And then later this year, China is going to be launching Chang'e 5, which will be kind of the culmination of their lunar plans. They will have a lander on the surface of the moon and a rover that will gather samples and return them to Earth, which will be a first since the end of the Apollo and Luna missions. So it's really a big year for sample return.
Remind us once again, though our audience has heard this a few times, why sample return is still so important. Why do we need to get this stuff back to terra firma?
There are a couple of reasons why it's so useful. First of all, the sample analysis capability that a spacecraft can carry to the surface of another planet is extremely limited compared to what we can do in laboratories on Earth. On Earth, we can take samples, fairly small amounts of sample, and divide them up among hundreds of laboratories. You can do things like repeat the same analysis in different labs to make sure that the results are, in fact, repeatable, which is a very important aspect of the scientific method. You can also apply analysis techniques that require enormous laboratories, things that couldn't possibly be miniaturized. One of the things that's very important to do with samples is to figure out how old they are and how old are the events that happened to the samples that may have reset some of their age mechanisms. If you can do that with samples brought back on Earth, the number of different kinds of analyses that you can do are just multiplied. And then one really cool thing you can do with samples is that you can save them. You can save them until new analysis techniques are developed, which is why the Apollo samples have continued to produce new scientific results year after year after year, because we keep developing new ways to analyze them. They're the gift that keeps on giving. Once we get these samples back to Earth, we'll be learning new things from them for many decades to come.
Yeah, I remember standing in that lab at the Johnson Space Center looking at the moon rocks that had not and would not be touched for perhaps years into the future, waiting for those new techniques. Emily, thanks very much. Great job as usual.
You're very welcome, Matt.
That's Emily Lakdawalla, the solar system specialist for the Planetary Society, our planetary evangelist. When Perseverance, the former Mars 2020 rover, arrives on the red planet next February, it will raise its mast and begin to share the best images ever taken of and on the Martian surface. Stereo images. And sometimes movies. Mastcam Z, with the Z standing for Zoom, is the product of years of work by an international team led by Jim Bell. Jim is professor of geology and planetary science in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at Arizona State University. He's been part of many, many missions of exploration, and he's also a first-ranked communicator about the passion, beauty, and joy he has found in this work. His best-selling book, Postcards from Mars, has been followed by many other books. We talk about the most recent of these and much more than we have time for here. That's in the online version of this week's episode at planetary.org/radio. Full disclosure, Jim is also president of the nonprofit Planetary Society. Jim Bell, welcome back to Planetary Radio. It's great to be talking to you again.
Matt, I love Planetary Radio. It is spectacular to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you, sir. Especially coming from the president. I hope that the science guy and my other bosses are listening. Listen, many of our listeners know that I was in the high bay at the Jet Propulsion Lab a few months ago, and I was staring in wonder at Perseverance, formerly known as the Mars 2020 rover. Mm-hmm. As I did that, it looked like two eyes were staring back at me. I was so proud, not just because the Society is an education and outreach partner for Mastcam Z, but that's a big part of it. I mean, if I felt proud, you must have felt at least 10 times that level of pride.
Absolutely, of course. And I am incredibly proud of the team. That includes the Planetary Society for our education and outreach, but the team of dozens and dozens of people at Arizona State, at Malin Space Science Systems, at JPL, at vendors and contractors across the country who've helped to put these amazing new robotic eyes together. And of course, all of the other systems and instruments and capabilities that Perseverance is going to bring to Jezero Crater. Spectacular.
I may come back to that team that you've assembled to build and hopefully very soon to operate this instrument on Mars. You said it, Perseverance is covered with eyes, but yours are up top. And by far the best. A lot of the audience has heard this before, but could you give us a quick sort of repeat overview of Mastcam Z?
Sure. Mastcam Z is a camera system for Perseverance up on the mast, about 2 meters above the surface. It's a pair of essentially identical cameras, left and right eyes, to give us stereo 3D views. Many listeners know that Perseverance itself is made from something like 90% spare parts from Curiosity, which is how NASA was able to fit this new mission into the budget. So we knew that we had to fit a camera system on essentially the same mast as Curiosity. Curiosity carries a camera system called Mastcam, which is a left and right eye. One is wide angle, the left eye, and one is telephoto, the right eye. So it's great images, and you've all seen the images from Curiosity, but it's a bit myopic, right? Because you got a wide angle view on the left and a telephoto view on the right. And it makes doing stereo difficult, not impossible, difficult. You can only do it at the resolution of the low resolution camera. Our idea was to build on that heritage and give Mastcam zoom capability, which is the Z. The Mastcam Z means it's a zoomable mast camera. And so we were able to build a 4-to-1 zoom lens system into that design to fit it into the same space. So this is in a lens about the size of a can of tennis balls, for example. Therefore, we could match the focal length, the zoom of both the left and right eye and get lots and lots of stereo, including at the highest resolution, which is about 110 millimeters focal length. We're going to build upon that heritage of imaging from Curiosity and expand upon it with a lot more stereo at high resolution.
If I read the specs correctly, my smartphone apparently has far more pixels than Mastcam Z. And if that's the case, how is it that this is still the best camera ever to be sent to the surface of Mars?
Yeah, no, it's true. Probably a lot of smartphones have better cameras than the ones on NASA spacecraft across the solar system. But it's also true that your smartphone will almost certainly not survive a crazy rocket launch and the shocks and vibrations of a landing system on Mars, et cetera, right? So NASA technology for proven spaceflight capability like this, these technologies typically lag consumer technology because that stuff just has to be so ruggedized, not only to handle the shocks and the vibes of rocket launches and landings, but the crazy vacuum conditions of space, the huge temperature swings on Mars from minus 100, 110 degrees C at night up to plus 5, plus 10 in the daytime every day, day after day. These are harsh environments that we send these cameras and other equipment out into. NASA is, of course, a conservative space agency. Almost all space agencies are conservative. So their basic philosophy is if it hasn't flown in space and demonstrated itself in space, you can't fly it in space, which is kind of crazy. It would mean you'd never fly anything. So instead, what it really means is we make incremental advancements in the technology and demonstrate that this new sensor, that this new system can survive in that environment, maybe through a tech demo mission or an Earth orbital mission, for example, and then it's ready to go into deep space. So that causes a, you know, 5-10 years or more lag between consumer technology and typically what NASA is able to fly. Now that said, they're HD sensors, they're a couple of megapixels. You've seen examples of images from these kind of sensors in the past, and they do a great job.
Catch-22 goes to deep space, but I only wish that my smartphone had a 4-to-1 optical zoom. I mean, that would be so cool. Yeah. So when did you and your team last touch the cameras? When was that handoff?
So that was back in May of last year, so a little over a year ago.
Wow.
We completed the calibration activities, the cameras on their own, on optical tables, on a bench, in the lab, in a small thermal vacuum chamber, either at ASU or at Malin Space Science Systems. We did all the tests we needed to do. We collected all the calibration data that we needed to collect. And yay, verily, they performed as we expected, which was great. And they performed great. Now, the image quality is spectacular. And, you know, signal and noise is great and all that kind of stuff. And then we handed them over shortly thereafter, about a year ago.
What happens when Perseverance arrives on Mars? How soon will we begin to see those gorgeous images and videos?
Yeah, the sequence of events will unfold similarly to unfolded on Spirit, Opportunity, and Curiosity in that, you know, on landing day, which is called Sol Zero, we land late in the day on that first Mars day. The first images we'll get back will be from the hazard cameras, the wide angle views. The mast is stowed still on the deck of the rover, so we can't take pictures with the navigation cameras or the Mastcam Zs. Those will be the first ones that we see. Now, the difference will be that on Perseverance, the hazard avoidance cameras are color this time. They'd been black and white in the past, so we could very well get the first wide angle color images of the landing site right on landing day, as we have in the past. It depends on the quality of the link with the orbiters and all that kind of stuff. But those will be the first things to come back. And then there'll be more of those on Sol 1. But really, the first couple of Sols is just about, hey, did everything survive okay? Let's check out the basic systems, the electronics, the heaters, the power supply, all that kind of stuff. And the mast will still be stowed. And then it won't be until the second full day on Mars, Sol 2, that the mast will be deployed and pop up. It's just a one-time deploy, pops up. And then we'll get our first NavCam images, which will also be in color, and on our first MassCam Z views. And then starting on Sol 2, and then going beyond that, we've got a whole series of calibration measurements and test images, and we're going to test out the zoom, and we test out the focus, and we test out the filter wheel, all that kind of stuff. And so we'll be getting, you know, like all the other instruments and systems, the first few weeks really are mostly about testing things out. And we'll try to collect the highest resolution color multispectral panorama that we can as early as possible, because of course, all of us who are also scientists will be chomping at the bit trying to figure out, hey, what's going on around us? Where's that delta? Did we land on it or near it? How far do we have to go? Which direction are we going to start heading? Let's start planning, all that kind of stuff. And then you mentioned movies. And I think that, you know, the first movies that we'll have a chance to take, I think, will be associated with the helicopter.
Oh,
you know, the Ingenuity helicopter being carried by Perseverance as well.
Where are you going to be on July 22nd or hopefully not long afterward?
Yeah, you know, of course, we were all planning to have a big team meeting at the Cape and enjoy the launch in person. And that's all been set aside, of course, because of COVID. But we'll be having some sort of virtual online celebrations with the team at ASU and the MassCam Z team spread around the world and the Mars 2020 science team. And of course, we'll be following the NASA JPL launch feed like everybody else on the countdown, and then watching us, our children cameras and other instruments fly off into the sky to their permanent home in Jezero Crater on Mars. It's going to be very emotional.
And then in early 2021, after those seven more minutes of terror.
Right. February 18th, 2021, like midday Pacific time, I think is the landing.
Can't wait for the snapshots. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for having me on, man. I love the show. You're doing a great job. Let's keep working to change the world, man.
You bet. Jim Bell, he's professor of geology and planetary science in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at Arizona State University. And as you've heard, he's principal investigator for MassCam-Z on Perseverance, NASA's next Mars rover that will leave for the Red Planet on or soon after July 22nd. He's also a best-selling author of, well, Postcards from Mars was one, but his latest books you just heard about, Hubble Legacy, 30 Years of Discoveries and Images, which I haven't seen yet, and The Earth Book, From the Beginning to the End of Our Planet, 250 Milestones in the History of Earth Science. And he's the president of the Planetary Society. I've also often called him the Ansel Adams of Mars. He'll get another chance to display that before too long. And you should stick around for a chance to win one of Jim's books, one of the ones we just talked about in What's Up with Bruce Betts, which is coming up in moments.
Hi, this is Kate from the Planetary Society. How does space spark your creativity? We want to hear from you. Whether you make cosmic art, take photos through a telescope, write haikus about the planets, or invent space games for your family. Really any creative activity that's space-related. We invite you to share it with us. You can add your work to our collection by emailing it to us at connect@planetary.org. That's connect@planetary.org. Thanks!
Hey, Planetary Radio listeners, the Planetary Society now has an official online store. We've teamed up with Chop Shop, known for their space mission posters, to bring you space-inspired art and merchandise. You can find exclusive Planetary Society t-shirts, posters, and more. Visit planetly/spaceshop to learn more. That's planet.ly/spaceshop.
It is time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. This is the Chief Scientist of the Planetary Society. It's Bruce Betts, and he is of course, also is the program manager for LightSail. And if you haven't seen the video, the on-demand video of the live celebration we did last week at the one-year mark when LightSail went from primary mission to extended mission, you should. It's at planetary.org. Okay, welcome. That's all the time we have, Bruce.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Everybody go out there, look out the night sky, and think about what it would have been like to listen to a What's Up episode. Thank you, and good night.
Hey, happy post-asteroid day as well.
I don't know what the appropriate greeting is for that, but sure, happy post-asteroid day, commemorating the 1908 Tunguska impact and reminding us that the asteroid threat is real, but something we can do something about. You can learn more at planetary.org/defense. We've got all sorts of asteroid information.
I think the proper response to happy asteroid day is, phew, another one missed us. What's still up there?
A lot of asteroids, but hopefully you won't be seeing any of those. I mean, unless you're in the telescopes and looking at asteroids, which is good. So anyway, up there in the night sky from our just using your eyes perspective, coming up in the late evening, 10, 11 p.m., we've got Jupiter really bright and near it, Saturn looking yellowish. And on July 4th, the moon will be lining up with them. July 5th, that night, the moon will be nearly full and between Jupiter and Saturn. Kind of a neat view. A couple hours later, bright Mars will be rising in the east and will be getting brighter and brighter over the coming weeks and months. It's going to be cool. In the pre-dawn east, we've got Venus now getting easier to see, higher up, super bright. Aldebaran, the brightest star in Taurus, that's about 100 times dimmer than super bright Venus, will be below it and passing by it over the next 2 or 3 weeks. They will be 1 degree apart, so about 2 full moon widths on the 11th and the 12th of July. The moon will join Aldebaran and Venus for a party on the 16th and 17th. You'd go to that party.
I'm there.
All right, we move on to this week in space history. Two big successes for which Planetary Society had major events. 1997, Mars Pathfinder successfully landed on Mars. In 2005, Deep Impact spacecraft successfully bashed a comet with an 800-kilogram ball of copper, making a crater. Moving on to Random Space Fact. Stay tuned for Random Space Fact. On Venus, the atmospheric density at the surface, it is so dense. How dense is it?
You took my line.
Oh, you're right. The atmospheric density at the surface of Venus is so dense.
How dense is it?
That it's about 6.5% the density of water. 6.5% the density of water. Oh, wait, that wasn't a joke. No, it's real. For comparison, that value for Earth is about 0.1% compared to 6.5% the density of water on Venus. All right, we move on to the trivia contest. I said, an ancient Greek analog computer used to predict planetary motions was retrieved from the sea in 1901. Dating between 87 BCE and 205 BCE, what is this relic called? How did we do, Matt?
What a huge response. Apparently, there are a lot of other fans of this ancient computing device out there, this ancient analog computer, joining me in my fascination with it. One of you directed me to Amazon, said there was a model of it. Not exactly that I could find. There were some things you could build. There are t-shirts, which I might have to get one of these. I don't know, Bruce. What was it? What's the correct answer?
I have no idea, Matt. I'm glad our listeners do. No, it's the, and I apologize if I don't know how to pronounce the Greek, the Antikythera mechanism. The Antikythera mechanism. Can you help me with pronunciation there, Matt?
Well, here's how Dave Fairchild, our poet laureate, put it. Antikythera, no, I have to get the emphasis right. Antikythera, easy for me to say. Antikythera Found in the ocean was made by the Greeks a long time ago. It had a lot of gears spinning together and showed many things that astronomers know. Lunar eclipses, the solar ecliptic, the zodiac signs, intercalary days, which I had to look up. It was as cool in the time it was built as the Apple Watch is to us folks nowadays.
Nice. And a wonderful pronunciation. You did an excellent job.
You think? So here's our winner. Brand new, first-time winner in the Netherlands, Edna Guetta. I don't think I've done a better job with her name than I did with the Antikythera. But she gave it to me phonetically, but this is the closest I can come. Edna Guetta. As I said, in the Netherlands, she indeed said it's the Antikythera. I'm just pronouncing it the way most Americans probably would. Mechanism. Congratulations, Edna. We're going to send you the Antikythera. No, we're not. We're not even going to send you a rubber one, but we are going to send you a Planetary Society rubber asteroid.
Oh, we should look into producing rubber Antikythera mechanisms.
You want to hear more?
Oh, I do, very much.
From Jake Manning in Illinois. Yay, I get to combine my passions of Bronze Age history and space with this one.
Yes.
Another poem. This is quite a work from Gene Lewin in Washington. Between the islands of Peloponnese and Crete, beneath the blue Aegean Sea, sponge divers found an ancient wreck dating from BCE. Within its bones, an encrusted piece containing at least 30 bronze gears, a prochronistic analog device, yes, well beyond its years. Its origins could be from Rhodes, though there is skepticism. So named for the island near where it was found, the Antikythera mechanism.
That's some impressive rhyming.
Ola Franzen in Sweden. Although it looks cool, I must advise that the frame rate when running is terrible, and the developers seem to have stopped releasing updates quite some time ago.
Darn.
And finally, this one, short but sweet, from Ian O'Neill in Japan. Took a licking, stop ticking.
Okay, we move on to another question, and I tried to be creative here. I learned some things, came out of the rabbit hole with a question, and you should be thankful to Planetary Society's COO, Jennifer Fawn, who argued that I should use the simpler of the two versions that I came up with. So this is the, oh, it's so easy and obvious version of the trivia question. What do the following have in common? The Venus atmosphere near the surface and some coffee decaffeination processes. Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
Wow. That's not so easy for me.
Yeah, I was kidding.
You have until Wednesday, July 8 at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us the answer to this one. Someone is going to win. I'll give you a choice. You can either have The Earth Book by Jim Bell, From the Beginning to the End of Our Planet, 250 Milestones in the History of Earth Science. As you heard, I have it, and I think it's terrific. Or the one I haven't seen yet, but sounds great, Hubble Legacy, 30 Years of Discoveries and Images by Jim Bell, with a foreword by our recent guest, John Grunsfeld, the guy who visited it three times up there in space. All right, we're done.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about what type of ancient relic mechanism you'd like us to find. Thank you, and good night.
Why is everybody looking at me?
We're digging up Matt.
He's Bruce Betts. He's the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, who joins us every week here for What's Up? Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its perfectly exposed members. Mark Hilvert is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Stay safe and well. Ad Astra.